propose to do a kind of experiential investigation with you, and then we can talk about it. And then maybe after a quick break, we'll do this dedicated practice of whole body awareness, which moves out to whole experience awareness and can be a doorway to a real singleness of mind, is the traditional thing. Before going into this kind of experiment about investigating your own experience, I want to talk briefly about what the Buddha called the four foundations of mindfulness. Sometimes that's translated as the four establishments of mindfulness. Or, to put it a certain way, what is it useful to be aware of? Right? And this will be familiar material for some of you. I'll do it in a pretty summary way. Basically, of all the, it's interesting, if you think about, for example, in the New Testament of the Christian Bible, how many words are actually attributed to Jesus himself? And if you do what Thomas Jefferson, who was the third president of America, author of the Declaration of Independence, and probably my personal favorite U.S. president, actually cut out the words of Jesus from the New Testament and then pasted them into his own Jefferson Bible and read it out every day. He went right to the source, right? Well, if you count those words, there really are not that many words. Then if you think of the Quran, the Prophet Muhammad, again, it's a fairly thin book. But the surviving written record of the Buddhist teachings in what are called the Nikayas in particular really would span a fine print books on a bookcase about that wide, which is quite remarkable, though. The earliest surviving written record, its origin is probably 400 or so years after the death of the Buddha, 2,500 years ago. And for several centuries, his teachings were passed down in an oral tradition. Individual monasteries, individual monks would memorize certain portions. People would come together periodically to chant the entirety of the teaching and make some selective choices about what was the real deal. And after centuries of that, there was a written record that survived. There were probably written records prior to that that did not survive. Interestingly, the Buddha was urged to write down his teachings, but he did not want that to happen because he was concerned, in part, that if his teachings were written down, they would become the province of a new priest class. And in some ways, he was to Hinduism at the time what Martin Luther was to Catholicism in terms of Protestantism. The Buddha was someone who was, in a sense, anti-clerical. He really said, look, people must practice themselves and directly engage these teachings, not mediate it through some kind of priest class. And second, it's not about faith, it's about practice. And third, the opportunity of complete liberation from suffering is available to everyone, not just Brahmins, not just a priest class. It's available to men, to women, to Brahmins, to untouchables, to monastics, to householders, to all. And by making it oral, it would make it more accessible. That's pretty cool. And very consistent with the spirit of Thomas Jefferson, who is to America, the great father of democracy, the believer in the regular person. So, and long story short, out of all these teachings, of the Buddha, it's fairly remarkable that his primary teaching about practice basically can be summarized or written down in its entirety in about a dozen pages. And that is the four foundations of mindfulness. He gave other instructions for practice to different groups, and he recommended different methods to different people, which is also a way of appreciating the importance of customizing practice or individualizing to a person in a setting at a time for a minute. It's okay. it's okay to be creative with your practice, as long as it's to a good, is founded on good intentions and is toward a good end. Because he himself is quite creative and resourceful in different practices or teachings he would offer for different people in different situations. That said, probably the core instructions for practice he gave are really contained in these four foundations of mindfulness. You may be familiar with this term, the Satipatthana Sutta. So first, what is mindfulness? The root of the word for mindfulness in Pali, sati, is memory, is recollectiveness. We are mindful rather than mindless. We're not mindlessly lost, we're mindful. We're recollective. There's a kind of a recursive quality that probably corresponds to certain recursive loops in the neural substrates of consciousness, of awareness, in which there's a kind of richness to the experience. There's an awareness of the experience, and also a metacognitive awareness of awareness, and it has sort of a little bit of a reverb quality to it, so that we're really present to our own experience. Okay? So mindfulness itself is to have three fundamental attributes. One is that it's spacious. It's very inclusive. Anything, it can hold anything. The second attribute of mindfulness is that it is itself not active. When mindfulness itself does not intervene in the contents of awareness. They're simply there. So there's a quality of non-struggle with what's there. There may be discerning awareness of, not so wholesome, very wholesome. But mindfulness itself does not struggle with with the contents of awareness. And the third key attribute is that it's sustained. There's a steadiness to it. There's an ongoingness of presence. We are present with whatever we're mindful of, typically our own experience, and it's in a full spectrum, and we're sustaining that presence. So that's the essence of mindfulness in many ways. It's awareness. Now, what are the four things that the Buddha said were a direct path? That was his language. Sometimes it's translated as the one-way path. Probably not quite so one-way. I mean, you can go down it for a while and forget about it. But it's a direct path. You stay on the direct path. If you stay on the path, it's a direct path. The four things to be mindful of are the body, in all its sensations, sights, sounds, touch, smell, taste. And also the nature of the body. The nature of the body to be impermanent, to arise and to pass away. Including components of the body. For example, there are meditations on, including in the four foundations of mindfulness, on the parts of the body, including some parts that are, not that pretty, pus, phlegm, urine, snot. Be aware of that. The Buddha was, as I said to somebody at an interview, a pre-modern postmodernist. He continually deconstructed things. To not take them so seriously as a strategy. Meditations on the body dying and dead and decaying and ultimately being nothing but bones. So that's the first foundation, the body. The second foundation for things to be mindful of is the feeling tone, the hedonic tone of experience. pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And it's quite remarkable, actually, that the Buddha put so much attention on the feeling tone. And it really is very consistent with modern psychology and modern neuropsychology in that the Buddha observed that that the feeling tone is not the problem. Feeling tones come and go. Pleasant comes, pleasant goes. Unpleasant comes, unpleasant goes. The problem begins with our reactions to the feeling tone. Now, he likened unpleasant feeling tones, for example, to the first drugs of life, with unavoidable, inevitable discomfort, physical and, let's say, emotional and social. But then we react to that unpleasant. We react to the first dart with the second darts we throw ourselves. And that constitutes the bulk of our suffering as a species. Similarly, if we can simply allow ourselves to like what's there, to enjoy the pleasant, that's okay. It's when we get caught up and we move from liking to wanting and grasp and insist that that's there too, is where we're reacting to the pleasant, giving time and trouble really begins. So he encouraged a deep awareness of the feeling tones of experience moment to moment, and in particular, awareness of the ways that the mind reacts to those feeling tones. That's the second foundation of mindfulness. He basically said there's a sequence, a chain of dependent origination, and key part of which goes from contact, or in modern parlance, stimulus, to feeling tone, to craving the continuance of the pleasant and the ending of the unpleasant, then clinging, which is a more elaborated form of desiring, and then suffering. Okay? Contact, feeling, craving, clinging, suffering. If we can step into the mind stream at the point of the feeling tone, we can install a kind of shock absorber there, so that there is the pleasant, there is the unpleasant, but in the pleasant there is only the pleasant. In the unpleasant there is only the unpleasant. In the neutral there is only the neutral. And that right there, then we cut the chain of suffering. And we undermine at the root the craving that leads to suffering. The Buddha put a lot of attention on that feeling tone business. And that's the essence of equanimity. In other words, where we don't react to the feeling tone. It's there. You may wish pleasant over unpleasant. That's human. That's nature. That's from the animal or the body. No problem. But with equanimity, with non-reactivity to the feeling tone, you just simply let it be there without adding insult to injury. That's the second foundation. Third foundation is basically the state of mind. You know, is it a mind caught up in greed, or is it a mind not caught up in greed? You have to be mindful of that distinction. Is it a mind caught up in aversion, hatred, fear is a form of aversion, or is it a mind that's not caught up in resistance the way it is? Is it a mind that is distracted? Or is it a mind that's collected? That's the third foundation, assent. And in the fourth foundation, we are to be mindful of a number of key themes, key subjects for investigation. These are, for example, the aggregates that I've mentioned before, form, feeling. So now we're revisiting the feeling tone. Perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, so we're to be aware of that. We're also to be mindful of what are called the hindrances, greed, hatred, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt, and these negative factors, we can be mindful of that. We're also mindful of the various senses, another category. Then, fourth, we're to be mindful of the various factors of awakening, the seven of them. The first one is arguably the most important, which is investigation. And then the last set to be aware of is the Four Noble Truths. Okay? Those are the four foundations of mindfulness in a nutshell. And the Buddha basically said, if you deepen your mindfulness of these four topics, matters, probably a good word, matters, you can become enlightened as a result. Yeah. So that's our context here. Okay? So now I propose a bit of an investigation, which is consistent with some of the meditations and investigations that he encouraged. And then we'll talk about it. So let's take a look, in terms of the first foundation of mindfulness, at body sensation. And see if there is self there or not. Kind of directly. So I'm going to suggest a variety of things for really a few minutes and see what you see about whether there's self there. And then I'm going to segue to the feeling tone in a more kind of dynamic way. And then we'll talk about it. Okay? So, you could just start being aware of your body. For example, moving your feet a little bit on the floor, or otherwise, maybe creating sensation in your feet. And ask yourself and investigate, is there I in that sensation? Move your body around in other gentle ways. Lean from side to side, lifting the shoulders, moving the hands. And every few moments, ask yourself, is there I in this sensation? Or what's it like for there to be only sensation in the sensation? If it's true for you that there is only sensation in the sensation, you might, if you like, softly say to yourself, there is only sensation in the sensation. Or perhaps say to yourself, there is no I in this sensation. This sensation is actually not self. If you like, you could create sort of a sharp sensation, maybe tap yourself firmly with one hand on your thigh. sensation cascade from that. Maybe a little ache afterwards. Is there self in that sensation? Sound. And feel free to go at your own pace here in these different investigations. I'll just keep nominating new things from time to time. In this case, sound. The experience of sound, is there self there? In the sound itself. Try this. Aspect of sensation. How about sights? Maybe letting your gaze move around a bit, and as you encounter new sights from time to time, asking yourself, is there I in that image? You know, an image of a zafu, an image of a blanket, an image of someone's feet. Is there I in that image? Is there I in that sight? Is I inherent in what is seen? Or can there be only the seen in the seen? sense of what this body feels like, your body. Relaxing around the sensations of your body and seeing what it's like to in the sensation of this body, letting there be just the sensation of this body. Influence the sensations of being this body, the sensations of this body, not trying to influence them, and also not trying or not identifying with them. Not adding any meaning to the raw sensation of this body. Up here, if you like, see if you can open to or find many qualities of peacefulness, tranquility, contentment, ease, that come from letting the body be the body, letting sensations be sensations, so that when sensations are only sensations. Registering the ease and there being only sensation in sensation. Okay, come on back. And ultimately, with this particular situation or any other situation, find something that's unpleasant. That you're really worried about or angry about, aggravated about. Think about that for a moment. Also have this observing awareness of how the sense of I, the sense of self, intensifies or organizes around some threat, some upset, something unpleasant. Okay, come on back.